You're listening to the Converge Podcast Network and The Conversation with Adam Weber, lead pastor of Embrace Church and author of Talking with God.
Everybody, I want to welcome you to the conversation. My name is Adam, and I am so glad that you are listening in. So honored that you are taking the time to listen to this podcast, to listen to this episode. As always, I hope and pray this finds you well. On my end, I am renewed and refreshed. Last week, my family and I, we took the week off, and we went to a vacation outside of Phoenix, Arizona. We went and saw my parents in Casa Grande, Arizona, and just had a fantastic time. It was a wonderful week. Basically, I spent the week in a retirement, like 55 years or older development, and it was awesome. I'm already looking forward to retirement, even though I truly don't think I ever will retire. It was a fantastic thing to do for the week. Back in January, it was a cold night. It was a cold time here in South Dakota, and I was also missing my parents when we decided to book the plane tickets and just go. This is something we rarely do, and yet I'm so glad that we did it. I just want to tell you, if you got a family member, specifically you got a parent or an older loved one that you love and care about, make time to go and see them. I think it was probably the biggest gift and the greatest gift I've ever given my parents, just taking the time to go and see them down south. I've just had a wave of friends recently lose their parents, and waves of friends hearing about their parents getting cancer and whatever else it might be. And so I'm so glad that my family and I, we took the time just to go and see my parents. I find myself doing that more and more and more the older I get. Instead of taking people for granted, really taking time to spend time with the people that I love and care about. So I just want to share that word with you. If you got a grandparent, a parent that you haven't seen in a while, that you just haven't taken time out of the rat race called life, I just want to challenge you and encourage you to do that. Whether it's a phone call if you can't afford a plane ticket, whether it's taking them out to lunch, going out for supper, doing something nice, just spending time with your family, I promise you, you will not regret it. So that's how I'm doing on this end. In today's episode, I sat down with my brother, with a pastor friend of mine, and a brand new author named Joshua Gagnon. The time was fantastic. Him and I, we crossed paths a few times. We talk about this through my friend and mutual friend, Brad Lominick. And so Joshua is just a huge brother. An encourager to me. Oftentimes he'll text me and just say, hey, I'm just praying for you. I just want you to know that you crossed my mind and I just took time to lift you up. And so Joshua is a guy that I truly love and care about. Well, we talk about dreams in this episode. His new book is called It's Not Over, Leaving Behind Disappointment and Learning to Dream Again. This book released this week. It just released. So go and get a copy of this. But we talk about dreams and we also talk about disappointment. And Joshua is really upfront and talking about the disappointment that he's experienced in his own life. And I've just found that I learn so much more from someone talking about their failures and disappointments than I do from hearing about someone's success story. And so Joshua, he comes and he really shares from the heart. And so wherever you are, whatever you do for a living, whether you're a pastor, a banker, a teacher, a nurse, I truly believe you will be encouraged. And so as always, sit back, relax, and enjoy this conversation. Well, I'm sitting here with my brother Josh. He is a pastor. He is now an author. We first crossed paths, I believe, back in Atlanta. I was trying to think about it this morning. We crossed paths at a conference and at Atlanta, and then got connected even more through a mutual friend of ours, Brad Lominick, just a guy that I feel like I owe so much to. But Josh, just want to welcome you to the podcast.
Thanks for having me, brother. Love you. Love what you're doing. Love your heart. Honored to be here.
Oh, so Josh, for the person who doesn't know us, this is kind of how I always start. If you just want to share kind of the overview, even just your story in general, where are you originally from? How did you come to know Christ? How did you end up where you're at?
Yeah, I'm originally from New Hampshire. Well, I was born in Texas, but I grew up mostly in New England. And my parents were Bible-believing parents. They gave their life to Christ when they were in their 20s. And so I was raised in a Christian home. And as we know, it's not a perfect home, but it was a Christian home. And I went to church regularly. And I would say around the age of 12 years old, I had just an encounter with Jesus. It's funny, my kids are now 12 and 11. And I've been watching because I'm seeing them grow more intimate in Christ. And I've been watching how, like, around that age, it was for me too, where you just have that moment with Jesus where tears start streaming and his love just captivates you. And so I was around that age and played a lot of basketball. And so throughout high school, never really went to church, played some college basketball, nothing huge, but I played college basketball, never went to church. And after I finished college, I came home and my mom said, "Hey, listen, let's go to church. Maybe you'll meet a girl there." And that was her trick of getting me back to church. And it actually worked. So good job, Mom. And
your mom was concerned about you finding a wife.
Yeah, she exactly. Either that or finding Jesus again. I don't know what it was, but we went back to church, and I started running the soundboard at the church, just heavily involved. Falling deeper and deeper in love with Jesus and just allowing his presence to change me and mold me. And next thing you know, I'm leading small groups and I'm leading a student's ministry and taking Bible courses online because I didn't go to Bible school the traditional way. And someone asked me, "Would you ever start a church?" And I'll be honest with you, I'm from the least church region of America, New England. And so we don't have a lot of church starts or church plants there, right? Like, I'd never seen it in my life. I had never heard of such a thing. And so, as ignorant as it sounds, I thought churches just always existed. Like, they were just always there. What do you mean someone started it, you know? And when someone asked me, it kind of caught me off guard. But long story short, we started Next Level Church in 2008. And we had 12 people, $270, and a pastor who had never preached a message to adults before, had never been to a conference, had never read a church planting book, and it was in the least church region of the country, never went to a church bigger than 200 people. So you can tell the odds were really for us. And so we started Next Level in 2008, and by God's grace, it has grown, and lives have been changed, and I was telling Jennifer yesterday, I remember the day I dreamt that 100 people would attend Next Level Church. I told her, like, I remember the feeling that it was so astronomical to ever think 100 people would ever come into the doors at one time. And I'm just in awe that our God uses imperfect people like you and me and does pretty incredible things. And so that's a little bit about the story. I got a wife named Jennifer. Malachi and Nehemiah are my two sons, 12 and 11. And I'm a blessed man. You called me an author. I don't think I can I call myself that?
Yes, you're officially an author.
Can you just say that again?
Yeah, exactly. You'll start. You're like, I didn't even know he was a pastor. I just thought he was an author. That's all I thought he was.
Can you call my English teacher from high school and let them know I'm an author?
Yeah, exactly. I'll never forget the day my oldest son got a book of mine. He was reading it, and I said, I had this feeling. I'm like, "Oh, my own son's reading my book. This is so good." And he said, "Dad, can I ask a question?" And I'm like, "Oh, this is going to be just this beautiful God moment." And he said, "Dad, I don't think that you use sentences." And I'm like, what do you mean? And he's like, "I don't think these are actually sentences." And I'm like, "Oh, okay, all right." And then he's like, "And Dad, another thing." And I'm like, "Oh God, like, what's coming next?" And he said, "I think actually most of your sentences are not sentences." I'm like, "Oh my goodness, I've totally failed, and my own son is like realizing I'm not an author."
Go write your own book, son, and then tell me, right?
Yeah, exactly. No, Josh, just a couple questions kind of back early on. So college, what did you go to college for? And before, did you have any idea of what you were looking at doing away, like, before you ever thought about being a pastor? Share that a little bit.
No, but I went to college. It was pre-law, criminal justice major, and didn't have any idea that I'd be a pastor. A long story, super short. My parents, when I was a kid, were told by somebody that somebody they didn't know, actually was a maid cleaning at a hotel. And the maid came in and said, "Your son's going to be in ministry and he's going to lead many people to Jesus." And my parents were like, "What in the world's wrong with this person?" You know? And so there was a couple times while I was growing up, my parents kind of whispered that memory to me. Wow. But no, throughout my early 20s, I had no idea that I'd be in ministry. I felt like you had to go to Bible school the regular way, right? You had to do it the traditional way, and all the odds were stacked against me. And I had nobody really, calling out that gifting in me. And so, no, it was really nothing I had planned to do, nothing we had set our goals on. Matter of fact, I owned a drywall company. Jennifer and I had just bought a house that was built on the budget of a drywall company owner, not ministry. And so when we started Next Level, we had to leave that home and get rid of our vehicles. And certainly in my early 20s, I certainly had no idea that this would be the direction that God would take me.
Man, that's incredible. Even just the fact that someone that clean in a hotel room would speak those words, and just for me, that just gives me chills about just the power of our words. And I have a similar thing in that my mom was told she wouldn't be able to get pregnant. I have two older brothers, and if she did, she wouldn't be able to carry it to full term. And she prayed and said, If I'm able to have this baby, I'll do anything for him to become a pastor.
Wow.
And then I come out of the gate wanting, like, my earliest memories of everything, early memories are me hating church. And so I wanted nothing to do with church. And she actually never told me that until I came to Christ later on. And it was another pastor who told me one time, Adam, I think you have a gift. And it's just kind of crazy how powerful those words that we spoke over other people are. Just amazing. Thanks for sharing that. One quick question I had too. You, this is totally kind of random. You mentioned just your own kind of moment when you were 12 and now having kids yourself. Has there been anything specifically that you feel like has been helpful as a parent to show your kids Jesus or to lead them to that relationship? I know for Beck and I, she's a pastor's kid and really rebelled against being the pastor's kid end of things. And we're just trying to figure out that ourselves. Has there been anything that you've like, gosh, this is, I feel like, move the ball forward with your kids?
Yeah, I think the thing that comes to mind is allowing them to find their own pace. You know, I can remember when they were, you know, 7, 8 years old, you always think your kids are older than they are, right? So at 7 and 8 years old, I'm expecting them to have these God moments. And they're kind of looking at me like, you know, I'd rather think of Superman, you know, than God. And so, you know, not rushing them, I think, has been something that's been a win, and not forcing them into moments, but allowing them to find true divine moments at the pace that God leads them has been something that I've had to sit back and just say, okay, God, you do your thing. And so the other thing is recognizing that just because they're pastor's kids doesn't mean that they have to live in, you know, a life that is extremely abnormal and have no fun. And so, you know, our kids, you know, they're big golfers. They love sports. And there's some weekends where they don't go to church. And for me, you know, some pastors, oh my goodness, you know, and there's other times where, you know, it's a heavy, heavy season of ministry. And I'll look at them some weekends and I'll say, hey guys, you want to go to church? Now, 9 out of 10 times, well, probably like 9.5 out of 10 times, they say, yes, they love church. They love going to see their friends. They serve. They love it. There's been a few times where they said, no, Dad, I don't really want to go today. And in those moments, I've said, all right, cool. Well, why don't you stay home? You know, you stay in, because I want them to know that church isn't their God, right? I want them to know that this thing that we do isn't how you love Jesus, but it's just a form, an expression of that love. But your love for Jesus is way bigger than what your dad does for work and what our family's involved in ministry. And so I think the pace that we just allow them to be themselves and have those experiences by themselves, you know, in their own pace, and then saying, hey, listen, if you know, church isn't everything, what dad does for work is not everything. You know, our life exists outside of the church. And so that's just been something we've worked hard at.
Oh, that is wisdom right there. And I think almost there's maybe some people who need to hear the opposite of what you just said. For myself, I needed to hear exactly what you just said. And one of the things I really found out parenting wise is my kids are going to have a different story than I did. And each of them are going to have different stories than each other. So our oldest son, his name's Hudson, I'm going to guess like 7, 8 years old, has had this passion for Jesus. And all the while, Becky and I are not pushing it at all. We kind of have a few things like, hey, go to church, go to youth group. You know, pray with us before meals and bedtime. But other than that, there's no pressure. Like, we're not following them up. Are you reading your Bible? Are you doing this? We're not pushing any of that. And so Hudson, right out of the gate, was like, I want to get baptized. Mm-hmm. And I actually felt like it was too fast because I'm just like, no, that happens when you're a sophomore in high school, like for me. And so I told him no, like for 2 years. And then one day Becky's just like, I genuinely think he loves the Lord and wants to get baptized. And it was so weird that I'm like, I'm the one holding my kid back in his relationship with God. It was just this kind of this, because I'm like, no, this is going to sound crazy. He needs to experience a little bit of the world first. I'm like, what? Like, where is that in the Bible? Like, tell your kids to go like do stuff, like not good stuff, so they can know how great God is or something like that. But it was just kind of, that was powerful for me to get. No, thanks for sharing that, Josh. So you are an author. Mm. You got a book coming out. It's Not Over, Leaving Behind Disappointment and Learn a Dream Again. Tell us the heart behind it. Tell us the why this book?
Yeah, the book is really inspired by the reality that far too many people in ministry, in life, in marriages, in sicknesses, you name it. The reality is far too many people have given up on a greater tomorrow due to the pains of yesterday. And so the book is about dreaming, but it's not about just going out and having these pipe dreams and just, hey, I want to be this or I want to be this or start this. It's bigger than that. It's not just a book to encourage us to dream. It's a book to help us recover from the pains of yesterday. Because the reality is dreams of tomorrow are injured by the remembrance of yesterday's. And so when I was looking at just all of the relationships I've had, all the conversations I've had over the last decade of doing ministry, I've noticed that far too many people have settled for believing that there's not a greater future. And I thought about like, listen, I mean, how can you go through life with joy when you feel like your best days are behind you? And so I said, hey, listen, let's unpack this thought. And really, the book for me became like this definite the moment I went to visit a friend of mine in prison. He was a pastor. He made a horrible mistake and one that I completely disagree with, and on I could go. But that doesn't mean he's not due love, right? The reality is we are still so called good. To love. And when the church turned their back on him and all his friends turned their back on him, I knew I needed to step up in love. Wow. And so I was the first person to ever visit him in prison. Here he is pastoring a large church and has everything and is, you know, known. And now, you know, a week later, here he is in prison. And I'm the first person, his first visitor ever. And I'm watching watching prisoners walk in and walk in. I'm just watching them hug their families, sit down. And it's just, of course, you're in a prison. There's just a lot of discouragement, a lot of despair, a lot of brokenness over past decisions. And my friend walks in, he sits down, and we're at table number 7. And we're sitting there, and I'm just trying to encourage him. And he's trying not to cry because he doesn't want to show weakness in front of the other prisoners. He says he can't do that. And we stood up and I gave him a hug for 3 seconds because that's what you're allowed to hug for 3 seconds. And I hugged him for 3 seconds. And then I stood back and I looked him in the eyes and I said these words. I said, you know, it's not over. It's not over. And he looked back at me and he said, I'm not sure I believe that. Wow. And in that moment, I felt so heavy by someone I love believing at that age, young age in their 30s, that it was completely over, that they now were just going to live out breathing, not live out living. Ugh. And I thought to myself, man, how can you, oh man, I felt so heavy. And I got in the car and I was driving home, and this is when it hit me. I was going by people mowing their lawns and pumping gas, just as you're driving home, looking over at people. And I felt like God kept whispering to me, they may not be in prison behind the walls of a prison, but they're living in the prison of believing that their best days are behind them, that it is over. Marriages, you know, going home every day in a splintered relationship and believing it'll never be any better, and sicknesses and miracles we've prayed for. And then the idea, Adam, of like dreams within us. Like for me, yeah. I'm super insecure, and I struggle all the time with just insecurity and not measuring up and fear of failure. And for me, believing that I'll never break free from that can be something I also live within, right? So they're not just the dreams we've given up on the exterior, on the outside of us. It's also the dreams on the inside of us that we've often given up on, overcoming an addiction and, you know, just giving way to the reality that it is over, that we can't overcome that or this, and that our best days are not ahead of us, that the status quo is now just breathing, brushing our teeth, and going to work. And so, you know, the dream for this book is, hey, listen, Inside of this book, we are going to pray that God inspires people to believe that they are not just to take up time, but they're here to live life on purpose.
Josh, that gets me fired up about the book. I'm not even kidding.
You're listening to the Converge Podcast Network. And now, a message from a network supporter.
This podcast is sponsored by Denison Ministries. Denison Ministries is a movement creating 7 million culture-changing Christians who are committed to carrying out the truths of the gospel to their sphere of influence, which is why Denison Ministries is excited about sponsoring what God is up to on the Conversation podcast. One of the cool ways Denison Ministries helps Christians feel closer to God is through their Pardon the Mess podcast, made for those navigating the messiness of parenting. And parenting is messy. Pardon the Mess seeks to equip parents with trusted, biblical guidance, helping them to raise their children with strength and joy in a changing and often challenging culture. With guests like Bob Goff, Jamie Ivey, and Priscilla Schreier, this podcast is for just about everyone. You can sign up for weekly Pardon the Mess blogs and subscribe to the Pardon the Mess podcast episodes at pardonthemess.org.
First off, just a couple of things. You being the pastor, and more than the pastor, the person who went to visit that friend in jail, is the reason that I wanted this interview. And it's the reason that I respect and appreciate you so much. And so for me, like, more than any attendance goals or campuses that you're doing, like, that for me is the real deal. Like, I, more than any other time in my life, I want to be the person that when everyone else is walking away, I'm swimming upstream, getting closer to the person. Even if it impacts my reputation, even if it impacts what others think about me, I just want to be that person that, that's close to that. So that's a powerful story. Again, don't feel like you need to answer this question, but is there anything, like, for you personally that you'd be willing to share, just a past disappointment?
Yeah. And
just even how you learn to dream again. Like, I learned so much more from a person's failures or setbacks than I do their successes. Again, don't feel like you have to share anything, but has there been a disappointment for you? You're just like, man, this really just hit me. It felt like someone punched me in the face. And here's how I got back up again.
Yeah. I'll give you two just quick ones. The first one being really quick. When I told you I never thought about being in ministry before. And I was with my pastor when God started to really speak to my heart about taking school online and Bible courses and learning the Word of God. And he started to really poke at my heart about this idea of being in ministry. Here I am running drywall company. I hadn't told anybody, Adam. I hadn't told anybody. I don't even know if I told Jennifer. I was so, like, shy. Like, you know, I just didn't feel qualified. And so I was literally golfing with my pastor at the time, and I worked up the courage on the 10th hole to tell him that I really felt called to be in ministry. And his answer was, I don't think that's what God has for you. And man, that was a really, like, a moment where it just felt like I lost the breath in my lungs. And that's one thing that comes to mind. Another one that comes to mind that's really close to this project is, and I think you would know about this, I'm pretty sure we had talked back a while ago, my first opportunity at a book completely failed. I had an agent that reached out to me a few years back and was like, hey, listen, you need to write a book. And I put together the proposal and I did all sorts of stuff for it and I sent it out. And he went to publisher after publisher after publisher after publisher. And finally, we got all no's. And one publisher even said, like, a Christian book will never sell in the Northeast. It's a very small market. It's a least churched area. We don't want to. And another publisher said, we're not sure that he's gifted in writing. And so there were all these sorts of, like, negative things that were coming back to me. And I felt like I had gotten, like, punched in the stomach. I can remember getting in the shower and crying and saying, God, why would an agent reach out to me? Why would you open a door that I had a fire for in my heart? Like, I thought that, like, this is a dream that I have, God. And it's like I was taunted. Like, they came after me. I don't knock doors down, God. They came to find me. And here I am going forward in these doors only to get them slammed in my face. And a mutual friend of ours, Alex Fields, he reached out to me as an agent and said, hey, listen, have you thought about writing a book? And I didn't get back to him He reached out to me a year after those denials. I didn't get back to him for another year.
Wow.
Because I did not want to face the sting of disappointment again. And by God's grace, this time we got, you know, 6 book offers from all of the major publishers, and to God be the glory for all of that. But it was understanding that in life you're going to face resistance, but resistance is the very thing we need in order to soar, right? An eagle, a plane doesn't soar outside of resistance. And so we want to avoid resistance, and we want to sit on a stump after we endure resistance. But the reality is I believe that if we're willing to grow, if we're willing to learn, if we're willing to take on resistance and understand that resistance is always in the recipe towards a greater tomorrow, if we're willing to fight through it, we're going to learn a lot about us, we're going to grow in the midst, and we can achieve greater dreams in the future. And so those are a couple of things I've had to fight through.
That's so good. And Josh, I actually thought about that moment yesterday when you reached out to me and let me know that you didn't get any offers. And it's one of the reasons I respect and appreciate you so much, is when I then heard that you had got an offer years later, it just was like, man, this is so rad. Like I was even more excited, not even for you as a friend, but I was even more excited about the book that would come out. Because I'm just like, man, there's going to even be more substance behind what's in these words. What can I ask, like, was there a turning moment where you wanted to try again, and what led you, like, away from Alex reaching out, like, was there something that led you to, like, okay, I'm going to put myself out there again? Like, how did that happen for you, even internally? Was there a conversation you had, or like, what changed that for you?
Yeah, I think when it comes to these God-given, God-sized dreams in our heart, they're flames. And even though we try to, you know, put them out, they're still flickering inside of us. And so even in those couple years where I was trying to put that flame out, you know, I could feel that flame burning inside of me. I could feel that flame growing. And I would say, no, I've already failed. I'm not good at that. Nobody wants anybody from New England. I'm never going to release a book. And I just keep pushing it down and pushing it down, pushing it down. Until one time I was talking to someone on our team named Roman, and he was like, why are you avoiding this? And I said, because I've already tried. And he said, have you ever thought, and kind of something you just said, Adam, he said, have you ever thought that the reason you didn't get a book deal the first time was because God needed these 2 years to do more in you so that the book could be greater and do more through you? It's when I realized that sometimes in the midst of the pain, God is doing what he can only do through that pain in order for you to produce a greater product, right? So I, without a doubt right now, can say, and this is just complete straight honesty, my last book would have stunk. Honestly, I've even looked at the proposal and I'm like, I don't blame them. Like, you know, like I don't blame them for not wanting that book. However, by God's grace, and I say this in humility, like, this book, I am super proud of and super excited to see the Lord move in thousands of lives, because this book is what it is, so much better because of that season. So I just think the other thing is just timing, right? We look at resistance as a setback, but what if resistance is the very thing used to propel us to soar?
Oh my gosh. Yeah. No, and that's a true story. It's one thing to say it as a nice, cute phrase, but when you've seen it time and time again, it's just like, no, that's actually the honest to God truth. And thank you, God, for being able to do that. And thank you for God for seeing the bigger picture rather than the short-sightedness that I'm constantly focused on myself. No, for someone like, you know, I think we all start out with huge, huge dreams as kids. I mean, even my son, who's, you know, kind of average at football, being a football player, wants to be in the NFL. Like, I mean, just like,
I have one of those.
Yeah. We dream often. And the older we get, like, just kind of life and reality just kind of punches that out of us. And so for that person who, you know, is working a job, like, and kind of has like a fairly normal life, I'm putting that in quotes right now, what would be your encouragement of how to dream again? Like, because I got to pay bills and I got this job and I got deadlines and kids and everything else. Like, what does it look like to dream again? I'm a dreamer, but I know that's not normal for most. Like, how does that happen?
you know, it's funny when you do look at kids, you've never met, you know, a 5-year-old who has given up on dreams. You know, they still think they can be Superman or they still can achieve anything they want, right? They can get to space. It's only when we start to endure or encounter the wounds in life that we start to realize or start to fall into a trap that our dreams will never become a reality. You know, life has a way of chipping away at our dreams. It has a way of causing discouragement, right? When you look at the word discouragement, really, when you look at the definition, expectation is found in the definition of discouragement. And so we expect, and then at some point, our expectations have been crushed so many times that we no longer expect. And if we no longer expect, we're no longer going to dream. And so, you know, one of the things I'm passionate about is the dream doesn't have to be at 40 years old to get to space, right? It doesn't have to be, I want to be, okay, I'm finally going to be an astronaut because that was my 5-year-old dream. But that dream might be, I'm going to dream of my marriage being restored and God rebuilding it and God creating a level of intimacy he has never created. Or I'm going to dream for my children to love Jesus and walk with integrity. Or I'm going to dream for my child to come back to Christ and I'm going to continue to hold on to that dream. Or I'm going to dream that God is not going to, that I'm going to overcome this sickness and God's going to heal me. You know, there's all sorts of dreams. And I think the danger a lot of times within books, and I didn't want to fall in this trap and we didn't, is that the dream has to be going off and starting a huge company and chasing after, you know, this opportunity of sorts. Yeah. And for me, it's like, wait a minute. You know, I don't know about you, but I have some dreams inside of me, you know, overcoming insecurity and seeing God use me in greater ways. And those are dreams that I often allow to die based on past experiences. You know, as a pastor, the best way I can explain it for anybody that's in ministry listening is those Easters we used to pray for God to do the impossible for 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, 5 years, 6 years, or that weekend we've been praying for God to do the impossible and it doesn't happen the way we thought it would. And then by year 7, 8, 9, you name it, all of a sudden we're starting to expect God to do a lot less. And I think that's the trap of dreaming. And if I could say just that's the trap of our prayer life and our dream life and how they parallel one another, how they coexist. Our prayers and our dreams, they coexist. They're not independent of one another. I was with a friend of ours, Daniel and Catherine. Daniel was the first hire ever at Next Level Church. And we were together about a year and a half ago. And their son was born with many different medical conditions. And they didn't know if he'd live. And I showed up at the hospital. And for a year, Josiah underwent 30 surgeries, spent more nights in the hospital than at home. And Josiah today, at age 10, still has many, many sicknesses and struggles that he'll never overcome outside of a miracle. And I was looking at Catherine, Daniel's wife, and we were sitting there. And I said, what's been the hardest part of the last 10 years? We were at dinner. And she looked at me and her eyes watered up and tears started coming down. And she said, praying. She said, Pastor, I used to put my hand on my belly and I would pray for my baby to be healed. And then God didn't do it. And then when my baby was born, I prayed and I prayed and I prayed for years. And now he's 10. And when I start to pray, I just feel sick. I feel used. It feels pointless. And I mean, we were crying at the table. And I got in the car with Jennifer and we were driving home. And I told Jennifer, I said, there it is. That's how our dream life and our prayer life, they coexist. Because the moment we stop dreaming that God can do the impossible, we start praying soft and safe prayers. But when we believe that God can do the impossible and we dream that God can do what it is we're hoping for or believing for, we start praying big, bold prayers. And for me, I started looking at my life, and this is so much different, right, Adam? Like we're talking about a baby here. But I start looking at my life in ministry, and I start thinking, boy, Josh, your prayers are a small, small skeleton of what they used to be. And I ask myself, why? And it's because I have 10 years of experience to talk me out of big, bold prayers or greater dreams. And so for me, that's been something like for that person sitting at home, like your question, like how do you dream again? You believe that you don't have to live in discouragement based off of the expectations that haven't been met, but you can believe in a God who can do in the future what you haven't yet seen in the past. And I wrote a part, that's one of the chapters in the book, and Catherine read it, and she said it's just been an amazing blessing to her. Matter of fact, last week, Daniel told me, they got a copy before anybody else, and Daniel told me, She was talking about it with him on her way home from work, and she was praying bigger prayers. And honestly, if I wrote the book for that one reason, and Adam, I know you have the same heart. Hey, you know what? Praise God.
Yeah, praise God. That's so good, Josh. Two last questions for you. How do you know if a dream is from God or just a bad case of gas inside you? Like, how do you know if a dream is from God and one you're supposed to pursue? How do you know that? And then if it is from God, what's one step that you would encourage someone to take?
Yeah, I think when you're looking at these dreams from God, they're going to want to align with his word, right? The reality is God's never going to give you a dream that goes against his character. He's never going to give you a dream that goes against his word. You know, when it comes to how do we know it's from God, we talk about it in the book, but that's the hardest part of the book to really write. You know, the reality is it's not a question always to be answered, but a tension to manage, right? The reality is there's no way I can tell anybody what is from God for them. But when I look at my life, I realize like I wanted to be an NBA basketball player. I played in college, but listen, you know, I could shoot the ball really well, but at 5'9", you know, there's probably not a future, you know? And so I was able to get over that dream pretty quickly, right? I was able to come to an understanding that wasn't my future. But like writing a book, for instance, it was this nagging thing with inside of me that I couldn't put out, and it aligned up with the gifts that God has given me. You look at the life of Nehemiah in the Bible, right? And we see how Nehemiah has these moments where his heart is broken by a need, right? There's this need to go and rebuild these walls. There was an opportunity that God was going to use him. He had abilities and experiences. Here he is leading in a kingdom. Like he had so much ability, so many experiences. And so I think when we just look at our life and how we've been wired in the flames we can't put out, and then the other things that God's word confirms. And so if you're in a relationship and you're struggling to forgive, but yet the dream in your heart is to forgive somebody, I can really tell you right now that's a dream from God. Right. That's a dream from God. If your goal or your dream is to overcome an addiction that continues to rule and reign in your life, like I can tell you that's a God-given dream. If it's to become an NBA superstar, well, I don't know. For some, yes. For others, your ability, your experiences don't really line up with that. Right. So I think it's a balance. It's a balance to manage, a tension to manage.
That's so good. And then the step that a person can take towards it, like any advice on like what's that first step to taking, just to pursuing a dream that you feel like is from God?
Yeah, that's a great question. To talk about the kids one more time, as you know, as a dad, man, we love it. That's what we talk about, right? But to talk about my boys, they love Lego sets. You know, they love building with Legos. And we went into a store, the Lego store, and they wanted this Lego set. It was 4,124 pieces. And I was like, you guys can't build that. Are you kidding me? Like, I'm like, go buy like 100-piece one. They're like, Dad, we've done big things before. And they're showing me like, we did this 3,000 set. You know, they're bringing it. I was thinking, man, these kids are dope. Like, wow. So I bought them this huge Lego set. Well, on the outside of the Lego set, if you can picture one, there's this completed picture. Right? It's completed. When God gives us a dream in our heart, it's a completed picture, right? We see it in our heart. I could see next level in my heart well before it is where it is today. And God may increase that picture, but he always gives us a picture further than where we are. And so when you get a picture of your marriage or a picture of overcoming it, you can see it in your heart. You can almost see the God-given dream in your heart. Now, here's the reality though. We get home with my kids, right? And they open up the box and you know what happens next. They pour out all of these pieces all over the floor. And I'm thinking, that's your problem, not mine. And how did they start? They had to pick up the next piece, the next piece, the next piece. And so I would just say for everybody listening, you know what dreams in your heart align with God's word, align with God's character. You know what dreams in your heart align with God's abilities he's given you and the talents and just the passions. And I would say the best thing to do next is to pick up the next Lego piece and be faithful and disciplined and obedient and start building one piece at a time. And even though it may take years, and even though it may take a lot longer than we think, as long as we're building piece by piece in faithfulness, we can trust God to be fruitful, right? And so for me, it's like the Lego set. I have that illustration in my mind all the time, even when it comes to the things that I'm dreaming for. Hey, Josh, just pick up the next piece and keep building. Just, it's not going to happen overnight. There's 4,124 pieces. God gave you a dream too big for you to accomplish overnight. The dream in your heart is a dream that's going to take a while. But if you're faithful, he'll be fruitful. And so that's kind of, I would just challenge people, pick up the next piece and don't get tired. Don't get weary of doing what is good, what is right. Stay faithful and God will be faithful.
Josh, no joke, not bragging on you. That's one of the best pitchers I have ever seen as far as pursuing a dream, a vision. Just something that's been placed in your heart and how to pursue it. That is truly awesome. Josh, for someone to follow you, what's the best way to find out about your podcast, find out about your book, find out about anything? Kind of share that if you would.
Yeah, it's notoverbook.com, but of course, anywhere books are sold, Amazon, anywhere books are sold, it's not over. My publisher just made me start up an Instagram account. And so I rebelled against those things as long as I could. But my Instagram is Pastor Josh Gagnon. Twitter is Josh Gagnon and Facebook's Pastor Josh Gagnon. And podcast is Joshua Gagnon Leadership Podcast. You've been on it. Hopefully we'll have you on it here in the next year as well. And we've been excited to have this conversation. You're the real deal. Not to brag on you too much, but you're the real deal.
Well, it's a two-way street, and if what you just heard doesn't convince you to pick up a copy of this book, I'm not sure you have a soul. So seriously, go get this book. Josh, thank you for being who you are, and thank you for not giving up and just continuing to pursue the dream that God has for you, a dream that's impacted so many other people outside of yourself, even just impacting me here in South Dakota. So just grateful for you, and again, just thanks for being on the podcast today.
Thanks, Adam.
Thanks for listening to The Conversation with Adam Weber. This show is part of the Converge Podcast Network. You can find more from Adam Weber on Instagram and Twitter and at adamweber.com. This show is